All right, I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. We're live for All Together Now news from around the region tonight. There are bad headlines coming from Istanbul, at least 10 dead in a latest terrorist attack. We've got news reports from Hillsdale, Philmont, Catskill, New Lebanon, Albany, Hoosick Falls, Petersburg, and points beyond tonight on All Together Now, your local regional show from Capital Region, Hudson Valley, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. Stay tuned. We'll talk to the congressional candidates running in the election that goes until 9 p.m. You've got time to vote and time to hear from candidates who've talked to WGXC. We'll hear excerpts of John Faso, Zephyr Teachout, and Will Yandick interviews that have been on the station later on. And All Together Now, now back into the pond.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Tuesday, June 28, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. Lorna Sherratt Littleway is reporting in the Columbia paper that the Hillsdale Town Board recently heard from Columbia Connect Chairman Howard Lieberman, who encouraged town officials and residents to exert pressure on Charter Communications to provide full broadband service to the area. Currently available internet service is slow compared to the broadband service in many other parts of the state, he said. Lieberman noted the Federal Communications Commission and state regulators placed requirements for upgraded service on Charter prior to approving the company's acquisition of Time Warner Cable, and he said there are, and I quote, piles of money, end quote, available to implement full broadband service. The effort will require a public-private partnership, Lieberman opined. He added that municipalities will have to be especially vigilant because Charter will not want to invest here. According to July 2014 data from the New York State Broadband Program Office, 74% of the county's population is unserved by broadband of 6 megabytes or more per second, which makes Columbia and neighboring Greene County the two worst served counties in the state. Columbia Connect is a countywide broadband task force created by the Ghent Community Action Network. You can read that full story in the Columbia paper. Today, Tuesday, June 28th, primary voters will go to the polls and choose the two candidates who will face off to replace Republican Chris Gibson in the November election for the 19th Congressional District seat. John Faso of Kinderhook and Andrew Haney of Millbrook in Dutchess County are competing for the Republican line, and Zephyr Teachout of Dover Plains in Dutchess County and Will Yandick of Livingston in Columbia County are vying for the Democratic line. Polls are open from noon to 9 p.m. For information, contact either the Greene County Board of Elections at 518-719-3550 or the Columbia County Board of Elections at 518-828-3115. Roger Hannigan-Gilson is reporting in the Register-Star that a brush fire that burned more than 8 acres off Stevers Crossing Road in Philmont on Sunday, June the 26th, rekindled on Monday afternoon. 5 fire companies were dispatched to extinguish the blaze for the third time in 2 days. The flare-up was minor compared to the original fire, Mellonville Fire Chief Michael Lehman said. The Mellonville Department and 10 other fire companies were called to the scene late afternoon on Sunday after a piece of farm equipment caused a hay bale to ignite. When someone attempted to move the burning bale to the pond, it caught the field on fire. The fire destroyed approximately 20 round hay bales, but no crops, and firefighters were able to extinguish the fire before it spread into the woods. The fire occurred at Hillview Farm, the new location of Common Hands Farm, which is currently in the process of setting up operations on the land. You can read that full story in the Register Star. Katie Kosajansky is reporting in the Daily Mail on the cooperative school now open in Catskill. The Catskill Wheelhouse was founded by four parents, Laura Anderson, Rob Kalin, Leslie Reed, and Andrea Mitchell, and is located on a 200-acre farm in Catskill. The Wheelhouse is described as a learning hub for children that embraces the beauty of nature as well as the community surrounding it. The nonprofit school serves children ages 3 through 10. They help with daily chores and clean up along with self-directed projects led by teachers at the school. And all of the food grown in the school's garden is harvested and eaten by the Wheelhouse students and staff. Anderson said the school is still accepting applications for its summer session and the fall semester. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. The Register Star is reporting the police will target impaired drivers statewide beginning Friday, July the 1st, and continue until Tuesday, July the 5th. The Columbia County Sheriff's Office, New York State Police, and the Greenport and Hudson Police will participate in the Stop DWI crackdown, according to Columbia County Stop DWI. The campaign is also active during Labor Day weekend, Halloween, and the end of December. One-third of all driving fatalities involve drunken drivers, according to Columbia County Stop DWI. Matthew Hamilton is reporting at Capital Confidential that new polls from the 19th Congressional District show Democrat Zephyr Teachout and Republican John Faso have expanded their leads in their respective primary races. Teachout leads Livingston farmer and journalist Will Yandick by 39 points, according to a Time Warner Cable News Siena College poll of likely Democrat primary voters released on Monday, June the 27th. Poll of likely GOP voters indicates Faso is leading fellow Republican Dutchess County businessman Andrew Haney by 30 points. 90% of the Democrats and 88% of the Republicans say they are unlikely to change their minds about whom they support before the primary on Tuesday, June 28th. All four candidates are hoping to replace Kinderhook Republican Chris Gibson. Gibson is not seeking re-election. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Larry Rulison is reporting in the Times Union that Berkshire Bank is expanding out of New York and New England. The Pittsfield, Massachusetts bank is acquiring First Choice Bank of Lawrenceville, New Jersey, a move that pushes its influence into the Mid-Atlantic region. The deal is valued at $111.7 million and gives Berkshire six new branches in the Princeton, New Jersey area and two in the Philadelphia area. Berkshire Bank has a large capital region presence, including branches in Cairo, Chatham, Greenville, and Hudson. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for today, Tuesday, the 28th day of June, 2016. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
The U.S. Supreme Court's ruling overturning key provisions of a Texas anti-abortion law is drawing high praise from reproductive rights advocates. The 5-3 ruling struck down provisions requiring hospital admitting privileges for clinic doctors and imposing the same requirements on clinics as ambulatory surgical facilities. Andrea Miller, president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health, calls the ruling great news for anyone who cares about women's health, women's rights, and the fate of abortion access in this country.
It's also important to remember that this is only a first step in starting to roll back the scores of anti-abortion restrictions that are on the books and in place in so many states across the country.
The ruling said the restrictions in the Texas law placed an undue burden on women's access to abortion services in violation of the Constitution. New York has long been at the forefront of protecting women's reproductive rights, including access to abortion. But Miller points out that in this legislative session alone, 11 bills attacking those rights were introduced in the state legislature.
And add to that, we couldn't even get our state Senate to take a vote on a bill that would ensure more comprehensive coverage for contraceptive methods here in New York.
Miller stresses that New York needs to work hard to live up to its reputation as a bastion of support for women's reproductive rights. Monday's ruling was the first time in more than 15 years that the Supreme Court has put limits on state abortion restrictions. Miller hopes that marks a turning point.
That we can seize this momentum and begin to truly move toward what the public wants, which is for women to be able to make these decisions, have this care be accessible and affordable in their communities without stigma and shame and pressure.
The ruling calls into question the constitutionality of laws limiting access to abortion services in several states. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to Radio News About Radio Waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
John Anderson reports in DIYmedia.net about current pirate radio action 1 year after the Federal Communications Commission announced it was scaling back its enforcement bureau and creating so-called tiger teams that swoop in with cheaper, swifter form of defense against the scourge of pirate radio. Quote, have they even been populated and trained up yet, unquote, Anderson asks, after reporting that enforcement actions are slightly up from a year ago, but not by any significant amount. Last week, the U.S. House Appropriations Committee voted 29-17 for a Federal Communications Commission appropriations bill that would dramatically reduce the FCC budget, mostly to attempt to hamstring net neutrality rule enforcement. But that also means less money for pirate radio enforcement, and lawmakers in New York City area who have been very vocal in their calls for increased pirate radio enforcement given the large amount of activity on the airwaves in the area might not be happy with the figures showing less enforcement in the area this year than last. So far in 2016, there have been 70 enforcement actions nationally, slightly ahead of the pace of last year's 125 actions. But Anderson writes, quote, with party conventions and elections looming, it's highly unlikely that Congress will get around to awarding any supplementary enforcement tools to the agency beforehand. And with a change in presidential administration on the horizon, Chairman Tom Wheeler might very well like to leave this entire issue for his successor to sort out, unquote. Read that full story at DIY Media. This is Tom Murr reporting for Wave Farm Radio and WGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
I'm Tom Rowe back in the WGXC newsroom. Today is election day. Until 9 p.m., there's two primary elections, John Faso and Andrew Heaney on the Republican side and Will Yanda for Teachout on the Democratic side. Michelle Kilgallen in Capital Confidential reports that the Columbia County Board of Elections was criticized today on election day by candidate John Faso, who said, quote, the Board of Elections here in Columbia County mistakenly printed the ballot with three names on it rather than just two names, unquote. Faso is facing Andrew Heaney for the Republican slot after Bob Bishop dropped out of the election earlier in the spring. Quote, so because of that, the machine would not read the ballot because it mistakenly has that third name on it, unquote. Later in the day, the Faso campaign said it had been told by the State Board of Elections that replacement ballots were being supplied to all polling places in Columbia County and should be distributed by no later than 4 p.m. Votes cast on the ballots featuring all three candidates will be taken to the Columbia County Board of Elections in Hudson for hand counting after polls close at 9 p.m., according to the Faso camp. Read that full story in Capital Confidential, the Times Union blog. Over the months leading up to today's election, three of the four candidates have appeared on WGXC. We'll hear short excerpts of first Republican John Faso from Kinderhook, Will Yandick from Columbia County, and Zephyr Teachout from Dutchess County, all running today in the election for the congressional election in the fall.
My wife and I, Mary Frances, have lived in Kinderhook for 33 years. I served in the state assembly representing parts of Columbia, Greene, Schoharie, Albany counties. I was Republican leader in the state assembly. I was the Republican candidate in what would prove to be a thankless mission back in 2006 when I ran for governor against Elliot Spitzer. I would note that I survived
number
that process.
Nine.
Yes, client number nine. But the fact is that Chris Gibson's announcement that he was not going to seek re-election meant that the seat was open. And frankly, I think the country is headed in the wrong direction in so many ways. And there's plenty of blame to go around, Republicans and Democrats in Washington. And my feeling is that we need dramatic change in the country, and that's why I'm running, because I want to be part of that change and try to bring about constructive solutions where both parties, Democrats and Republicans and also independents, get in this game and try to fix the issues that we face. Because the overriding issue in my mind is that we don't have enough economic growth in the country. And we know in upstate New York, people are fleeing. We've lost 1 million people in the last 10 years. We talked about the schools. All the school districts in Columbia County, for instance, have had 15 to 20% drops in enrollment in the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
What does that mean? That means our kids and our grandchildren can't stay.
Right.
They're leaving upstate New York, and it's vitally important that we change the economic dynamic on the ground here in upstate New York. So that's why I'm running. And so I've been long involved and invested in this community. We have a stake in it, and I want to see better opportunities for the future here. So that's why I am running for Congress, and hopefully I can, if I'm successful and the people trust me with the position, that we can make some positive change.
Yeah, so I was down the road because this is my home county, and I grew up here, was born in Hudson, went to Hudson High School. Great public school teachers, Justin knows them well.
Yes.
And was one of the lucky few to get scholarships to some good schools like Princeton and Brown. And that's usually where the story ends for people like me. They get good educations. We raise good families here in Columbia County. And then we often don't have the job opportunities to keep them here.
Right.
I grew up on a farm that my great-grandfather purchased in 1915 in Livingston, just about 6 miles outside of town. We celebrated our 100-year anniversary last year, and I'm a new dad for the first time. My partner Amir and I just welcomed a fifth generation to the farm, our brand new son, John Abraham.
Oh, congratulations.
Wow, congrats.
That's exciting. So you're very busy.
We are. I figure we're going to do it all at once. Start a family, run for Congress.
So what made you decide to go into public service? Is that in your family history as well, or just something you felt drawn to?
It's something I felt drawn to when I really came back full time. I've been coming back to Columbia County and upstate New York throughout my career, but really put the full-time anchor down about 6 years ago. And ran for the Livingston Town Board.
Right.
And I believe I've been told I'm the third Democrat ever elected since the Whigs in the 1830s. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Whiz.
Which was from the 80s or 90s.
Doing my math.
Not that impressive if it were the Whigs. The Whigs, very impressive. Yeah.
Yes, congratulations. Very impressive.
Livingston is quite the Republican stronghold town in Columbia County, and that is quite impressive. And not only did you run and win, but you were appointed the deputy supervisor.
That's right. And have a very good working relationship with my Republican board. And I think that's really the job. I mean, we live in one of the most bitterly partisan, divided Congresses that we've seen since the Civil War. And we need individuals that are able to work beyond their ideological party base to get things done. That's something that I've done at a local level, and I certainly acknowledge that I'm coming from a town of 3,600 people.
Right.
But I really think those are the skills that apply to this job. And when we look at the people that have won and kept the seat and done good things with this congressional seat, whether it's Kirsten Gillibrand or more recently Chris Gibson, these are folks that came at this job not with a lot of legislative experience,
right,
but the ability to listen to their community and get things done across the aisle.
And actually, thank you for having me on the show, because I think some of the reasons that the listeners know who I am is because of being able to come on this show. So
thanks
for
so
that.
Much.
Good. Thank you.
Since we have a little time, and we have a long time in this campaign, you know, several months. It's not like the gubernatorial race, which was actually only 3 months long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually am delighted to get the chance to introduce more about myself than the anti-corruption part, which you may know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a law professor at Fordham. I live in Dover Plains. And I'm from rural Vermont. It's a town about 2 hours northeast of the district, of the 19th district, mm-hmm. Which is a new district. Your listeners should look online at the map. It's a big, diverse, beautiful district.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is a judge. My dad is also a law professor, so I clearly followed in
those. Runs in the family.
Yeah. And
often does, right?
Yes, I actually have a bunch of siblings. I have 4 siblings. Two of them are also lawyers.
Huh.
I was a teenager in the 80s during the dairy crisis, the farm crisis.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our neighbors were dairy farmers, and really was impacted by seeing that our world, the agricultural world, no longer be able to survive in the same way and find new ways in which to build an economy.
Mm-hmm.
I went to college, and my first job out of college was I was a special education teacher's aide in a small rural public school, and education has been really important to me ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became a lawyer, and in the last, really, for most of my career, I have been fighting against big money in politics, really working to rebuild an economy and a democracy that works for all people, not just the wealthy and well-connected.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour, broadcasting live every weekday morning at 8 here on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Philip Gray, one of the contributors to All Together Now. Listen to Democracy Now! In the morning and All Together Now! In the evening, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m., featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported hands-on radio.
Democracy Now! At 8.
All Together Now! At 6 p.m.
Here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have these reports.
It's Tuesday, June 28, 2016.
Historic floods devastating coal mining country.
More deadly floods, this time in West Virginia.
Dozens of homes exploded. Roads covered in smoke and flames.
Raging wildfire kills 2 in California, destroys hundreds of homes. Brexit could undermine international emissions agreement. Volkswagen to pay $15 billion in emissions cheating scandal. Plus, TransCanada demands $15 billion from the U.S. for rejecting its Keystone XL pipeline.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Tuning us live from the devastation this morning with the very latest is West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who's seen these types of floods a number of times in that state.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Oh, man. Fox News, even when they cover climate change, they can't tell the truth about it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I hate it when stuff that you have warned us about for years actually comes to pass. But I'm afraid we're looking at that in both West Virginia and California today.
Yes, unfortunately. More historic deadly floods, just like last year in South Carolina, just 2 weeks ago in Houston, this week hitting West Virginia. President Obama has approved federal disaster aid, and West Virginia Governor Earl Ray Tomlin has declared a state of emergency after record rainfall triggered flash floods that have killed at least 23 people, destroyed thousands of homes and businesses across the state over the weekend. West Virginia's former governor and current Democratic Senator Joe Manchin said he has never seen anything like it.
This is unbelievable. I mean, I've never seen water this high. Waters just rose so quickly. There was such a deluge of water coming at us. It never eased up at all, and people...
problem in California, where Governor Jerry Brown has declared a state of emergency over a fast-moving, deadly wildfire in Kern County, north of Los Angeles, that has killed at least two people and destroyed more than 200 homes, burning over 60 square miles. Driven by high winds and historic drought, officials now say firefighters are gaining some control over the blaze despite working in temperatures over 100 degrees.
And it's not the only fire. There are some 9 different wildfires across Southern California as we go to air here today.
In international news, in the wake of the monumental vote for Britain to exit the European Union, called Brexit for short, scientists and environmental groups are warning that it could have far-reaching implications for international climate change policy and agreements related to climate science research. Political leaders of the Leave campaign are climate science skeptics who could weaken Britain's progress in phasing out coal and its commitments to cut greenhouse gas emissions in the landmark Paris Agreement. If the exit proceeds, UN officials say the Paris Agreement emissions targets may have to be recalibrated. In the U.S., pipeline company TransCanada on Friday officially filed a formal request seeking to recover costs and damages after President Obama rejected a permit for their controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline across the U.S. They're using a mechanism in NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which allows foreign corporations to sue national governments over unfavorable regulations. Environmental groups say TransCanada's move illustrates how a similar mechanism in the pending TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, now awaiting approval by the U.S. Congress, can also be used to weaken environmental policy.
So we used our own sovereign decision-making process on whether their pipeline can come down here into the U.S., and now they're saying we have to pay them $15 billion for having made that decision?
That's right.
Hell of a thing, these trade deals. How do I get a piece of that?
Finally, Volkswagen has reached a settlement with federal regulators in its emissions cheating scandal. The German carmaker will pay over $15 billion in fines and penalties. It's the largest in automotive history after it admitted last fall that it intentionally installed illegal software on its cars to cheat on U.S. vehicle emissions tests. If approved by a federal court, the settlement includes an estimated $10 billion to buy back cars from owners in the U.S., $5 billion for environmental damages and investments in zero-emissions vehicles. Earlier this month, Volkswagen announced a sweeping overhaul of its product line. It promises to deliver 30 new plug-in electric vehicle models within the next 10 years.
And they continue to face criminal investigation as well in that scandal, do they not?
Yes, they do.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Let me present to you my Volkswagen Blues, ready to carry me away, a long way to reach the moon. Let me present to you my Volkswagen Blues, ready to carry me.
All together now. You're listening to the WGXC News Update. I'm Alana Medlock. Rick Carlin reports in Capital Confidential that a Rochester-area lawyer, Paloma Capanna, working with the group Shooters Committee on Political Education, or SCOPE, filed hundreds of Freedom of Information law requests to see who was on a mental health-related no-gun list a year ago, and has not heard back from state police. So the lawyer and group are headed to a New York court after getting what they say are unresponsive answers from the NYSP, filing an Article 78 suit regarding the requests. Recently, Congress briefly discussed a few bills that would limit gun access to anyone on the no-fly list, but no legislation was passed. Elian Gados in the Columbia Paper reports that New Lebanon listened to conservation ideas from Hudsonia biologist Gretchen Stevens, who, thanks to a grant from the Hudson River Estuary Program, is studying local waters. Stevens, with the Town Conservation Advisory Council, has been working with Darrow School students, gathering data on small streams, vernal pools, and old forests, looking for rare plants, animals, and habitats in New Lebanon. Quote, "Limestone throughout much of the town can create very interesting and unusual habitats," Stevens said, noting local carnivorous plants such as blue cohosh and toothwort, which support the larva of the Virginia white butterfly. Stevens is available Sundays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the New Lebanon Farmers Market at Windswept Farm, 36 Old Route 20 in New Lebanon. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. Lindsay Nielsen at Albany's News 10 TV. National Institutes of Health to help educate and assist people suffering in the PFOA water contamination crisis in Hoosick Falls and Petersburg in Rensselaer County. Quote, "It's about time somebody stepped in and done something," Amos Jones of Petersburg said. "Justifiably concerned, but not enough information has been disseminated to put this severe level of PFOA into context," the letter says, asking for, quote, "public meetings in the community, providing public health experts and scientists to assist the state and create relevant online information sources," end quote. Read the full story at Albany's News 10 TV's website.
Claire Boone reported in Hyperallergeric that Troy-based art activist group The Yes Men have now started a website called, and I quote, "Share the Safety," end quote, purporting to be a joint effort between the National Rifle Association and arms manufacturer Smith & Wesson to donate a gun to a, and I quote, "less fortunate," unquote, U.S. citizen for every gun sold. The Share the Safety program promised a gun to someone living in an at-risk neighborhood whenever someone purchases one of three Smith & Wesson weapons. Donors can also choose from 10 U.S. neighborhoods. The Troy-based group has previously had fake press conferences and a fake edition of the New York Times making various political points with their satire. This time, the group announced the gun initiative at the Reagan Library in California.
I'm Hensley Cocker. I'm from Share the Safety. We're about to do an announcement on behalf of the NRA in that room, and it's an announcement about sharing the safety with various tragically underarmed groups of Americans that need the safety of firearms.
Yep. We really wanted to make this announcement in the shadow of the man who meant so much for our organization. So thank you, and thank you. Share the Safety is nothing less than a revolutionary tool that is currently designed to get guns to a very important group of Americans. It's a buy one, give one program like Tom's Shoes, in which market forces are harnessed to get essential items wherever they're needed. In our case, it's about getting the safety of firearms to some of America's most embattled citizens, those who face a disproportionate amount of violence at the hands of out-of-control authorities.
You can read the full story in Hyperallergeric.
At one end of the Hudson River on June 27th, the Stonewall National Monument for Christopher Park was dedicated in Manhattan. Across from the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar where riots in 1969 kick-started a public gay liberation movement in the United States. At the other end of the Hudson River on June 23rd, Albany police and the FBI began investigating the burning of an LGBT flag outside the Albany Damien Center, Time Warner Cable reported. Quote, "I've had a pit in my stomach all day long, sort of almost a look over my shoulder type of feeling," end quote, said Perry Junjulas, executive director of Albany's Damien Center.
Tiltaalik reports in the Altamont Enterprise that Westerloo is spending $60,000 on preparations to renovate its town hall, a former school the town purchased in 2010. In November, the town will have a referendum on the general election ballot to approve a bond issue to finance the project. In 2015, Westerloo approved a plan to renovate the town hall and build a new highway garage by issuing $2.5 million of bonds. Some residents challenged that project, petitioning for a permissive referendum, which was defeated. But some voters complained about the cost and lack of transparency. But the town garage was not mentioned by town board members at the recent town board meeting, even though it still needs repair. Councilman William Bechtman said he expects the cost of renovating town hall, quote, to be way less than $850,000, unquote. Read the full story in the Altamont Enterprise.
Governor Andrew Cuomo announced June 24th that maple syrup production in New York increased by 18%, breaking last year's 70-year production record by more than 100,000 gallons. New York maple farmers produced more than 700,000 gallons of maple syrup in 2016, thanks to warmer-than-normal temperatures, extending the extraction season. The USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service says New York's maple production made up about 16.8% of the national total. The number of taps in the state rose to more than 2.5 million in 2016, the highest number of taps since 1947. This has been the WGXC News Update.
Next, we have these reports.
Implementing a clean power plan could cut carbon emissions and save New York consumers money. That's the finding of a new study by the Georgia Institute of Technology. Opponents of the EPA's plan claim that enforcing mandatory reductions in emissions from power plants would bankrupt the nation. But according to Dr. Marilyn Brown, author of the study, there are cost-effective ways to go about it.
What we're showing is, in fact, if done wisely, we can save consumers money and also prevent fossil fuels from heating up the planet.
The report says if nothing is done, electric bills would go up in New York by almost 20% over the next 15 years. But with the clean power plan, the average household in the state would save more than $1,900 in the same time period. New York gets only about 10% of its electricity from coal-fired power plants, and the state is making significant progress in developing renewable energy sources. Brown points out that increasing energy efficiency could play an important role in achieving clean power plan goals.
If we move to this high-efficiency future, we can transform our energy sector so that it is less emitting of CO2 and at the same time saving us money.
New York has banned fracking for natural gas, another potent contributor to climate change, but there are dozens of projects like gas and oil pipelines still being planned in the state. Brown says those projects could extend reliance on gas well into the future.
If we cut back on our electricity requirements by investing in efficient equipment, then we can prevent the buildup of this expensive infrastructure that would not serve the next generation very well.
Though the EPA's clean power plan has been put on hold as legal challenges make their way through the courts, New York State is committed to meeting or exceeding carbon reduction goals on its own. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO Tuesday is hosting a conference on the impact global trade deals are having on workers. The Labor Federation says trade agreements like the TPP, the Trade and Services Agreement, and the U.S.-EU Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership can lead to job losses and lower wages. The AFL-CIO says these agreements can threaten national security and democratic accountability. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka, Ohio U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, and economist Dean Baker are among those participating in Tuesday's conference in Washington, D.C. A few hundred people took part in a vigil outside of the Mexican consulate in Los Angeles to honor people killed and injured in labor protest clashes with police in southern Mexico. Organizers of the rally are calling on the Mexican government to stop its repression of the teachers' union and cease efforts to privatize education. Ernesto Arce has more from Los Angeles.
Los Angeles activists held a solidarity vigil for victims of a teachers' union strike in Oaxaca, Mexico. They say educators from rural low-income towns south of the border fear for their lives, especially after the most recent carnage. Gladys del Puerto is a spokesperson for the Latin American Coalition for Ayotzinapa.
Lo que sucede es que la gente está saliendo a protestar, pero el gobierno los está reprimiendo.
So people are going out to protest,
but the government is repressing them.
State and federal police in the southern unleashed an attack on protesters that left at least 8 dead and dozens injured and unaccounted for. Police were responding to mass protests in Oaxaca. It's the arrest of 2 leaders of the CINTE, the National Coordinator of Education Workers Union. The militant labor group is fighting what it calls reprisals against the union, education reform that will push many thousands out of the profession. Southern California activists pledged to keep up pressure on the Mexican government from this side of the border, where one organizer said the Mexican people's will roars just as loud. For Workers Independent News, Ernesto Arce, Los Angeles.
The Department of Labor says it's investigating whether workers on a Trump hotel in Washington, D.C. are being cheated out of legally required wages. A subcontractor, the Craftsman Group, allegedly paid wages lower than those required under the Davis-Bacon Act. That federal law requires any projects that involve federal government or the District of Columbia backing to pay prevailing wage. Glaziers, who install shower doors in the $200 million Trump D.C. hotel, complained that they were not paid legally due wages.
Brought to you by the Alliance for American Manufacturing, working to prevent the loss of American.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, June 28, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Here's a look at what's making news. A Supreme Court abortion ruling could have implications across the nation. A victory for salmon habitats in Washington. And doctors urged to screen teens for suicide risk. Leading our news, abortion regulations that are not justified by medical necessity could be coming under the microscope, as the U.S. Supreme Court in a 5-3 ruling struck down key parts of a Texas law that severely restricted how abortion clinics could operate. Mark Richardson explains.
The ruling, hailed as a major milestone by pro-choice groups, removes medical practice regulations placed on abortion clinics so restrictive that since they were enacted in 2013, half of the clinics in Texas were forced to close their doors. Heather Busby, executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Texas, says the outcome is the result of a long, hard fight.
This is a tremendous victory for the health and safety of not just people in Texas, but across the nation. We feel vindicated because we knew from the beginning this law was a complete sham, that the reasons they were trying to pass it were absolute lies.
The decision, written by Justice Stephen Breyer, found the Texas law placed an undue burden on women seeking an abortion. Justice Anthony Kennedy was the swing vote in the decision.
Some challenges to similar laws in other states are already ongoing. Others will likely be brought in court very soon, as advocates vow to keep fighting until access is restored for all women in the country. Montana's medical marijuana dispensaries are one step closer to shutting down after the U.S. Supreme Court Monday rejected an appeal brought by the Montana Cannabis Industry Association.
The Montana Cannabis Industry Association, or MTCIA, had asked the High Court to overturn a ruling by the state Supreme Court that upheld Montana's highly restrictive 2011 medical marijuana law. The law, which takes effect on August 31st, limits dispensaries to just 3 patients. But Kate Holeva with the MTCIA says there's still a chance the district court will block implementation until the November election.
It seems rather pointless and cruel, really, to, for 10 weeks, deny Montana's patients access to a therapeutic that they've come to depend on.
Recently, advocates turned in more than 42,000 signatures to put Initiative 182 on the ballot, which would establish a clear legal framework to regulate medical marijuana. I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new poll shows that almost 8 years after electing a black president, vast majorities of blacks and Hispanics think President Barack Obama at least tried to make race relations in the U.S. better. But the Pew Research Center report also found only about half of whites think Obama made race relations better, or at least tried to make race relations better, but failed. Almost a third of white people said the president made race relations worse. Native American tribes in Washington state received a victory Monday from a federal appeals court that ruled the state must pay to fix fish-blocking culverts.
Culverts allow rivers and streams to flow underneath roadways, but can be trouble for salmon swimming upstream if they are damaged or too small. Fawn Sharp, president of the Quinault Indian Nation, says this decision will go a long way toward protecting salmon in the Northwest.
There's an affirmative and positive duty on the United States to ensure the protection of the habitat, the conditions to not only survive, but to thrive.
The Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals decision upholds a federal court's decision from 2007, requiring Washington to invest $2.4 billion into culvert repairs over the next 15 years. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Ahead of an upcoming release of a Republican-led House Selected Committee report on Benghazi, Democrats on Monday issued their own version of an investigation into the incident. The 2012 terror attack killed four Americans, and the move by Democrats is said to be aimed at debunking the conclusions of the committee's report that is expected to be highly critical of Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time. The Democratic report argues that the Pentagon could not have done anything on the night of the attacks in Benghazi that would have saved the lives of U.S. Ambassador to Libya, Chris Stevens, and three other Americans. Republicans have accused the Obama administration of failing to deploy military assets to rescue the Americans. In health news, in the wake of new details that suicides risen to the second leading cause of death among young people, the American Academy of Pediatrics is urging pediatricians to screen their patients for suicidal thoughts and risk factors. Brandon Campbell has more.
The report, titled Suicide and Suicide Attempts in Adolescents, updates an American Academy of Pediatrics report from 2007 when suicide was the third leading cause of death for people age 15 to 19. The new research lists bullying and internet use as big risk factors for that age group. Dr. Benjamin Shane of North Shore University Health System is lead author of the report. He says online bullying can be as serious as face-to-face bullying.
Both bully victims and bully perpetrators are affected, and the group that's affected the most is the group who are both victims and perpetrators, had the highest increase in mental health concerns, suicidal thoughts and behaviors, and suicides.
Dr. Shane says one of the best ways for parents to help prevent youth suicide is to talk openly and calmly with their kids. I'm Brandon Campbell reporting.
Retailer IKEA is voluntarily recalling about 29 million chests and drawers after at least six children were crushed to death after the pieces fell on them. The Consumer Product Safety Commission says at least 36 kids have been injured by the IKEA chests and dressers, which are prone to tip over when they aren't anchored to the wall. The deaths, all children under the age of four, date back to 1989 and are as recent as of this February. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
The WGXC community calendar has all sorts of events in there for you to possibly participate in and enjoy. All kinds of things going up and down the Hudson River from the Catskills to the Berkshires and the Capital Region and the Hudson Valley. It's all in the WGXC community calendar, and you can even add your own event there at WGXC.org. Click on the calendar and click on the Add an Event button to add your own event. Soon, folks like me will read it on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org. Wednesday, June 29th, Alana State Historic Site has a Art in the Morning for Preschoolers program from 10 a.m. to noon for kids that are out of school this summer. There's also Mapping at Magpie Thursday, June 30th at the Magpie Bookstore in Catskill from the Catskill Mapping Project. Mary Bird performs at the Dreamaway Lodge in Beckett, Massachusetts Thursday, June 30th. Friday, July 1st, Pat Lennon, Brandon Schmidt, and the Orchids perform at the Magpie Bookstore in Catskill. Live performance from 7 to 10 p.m. on Main Street in Catskill. 392 Main Street is where Magpie Books is. Simi Stone is at the Club Helsinki in Hudson Friday, July 1st. Ramblin' Jug Stompers are at the Bridge Street Theater Saturday, July 2nd, 7:30 p.m. Nicole P. Yerowakander and the Low Mentality are at the Half Moon in Hudson. That's members of Antibalas performing Saturday, July 2nd in Hudson at the Half Moon at 8 p.m. All these events and more are on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Please participate in your community radio station. Add an event to the community calendar. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra. Since there is a member of Antibalas performing Saturday, July 2nd at the Half Moon in Hudson, we'll hear a Antibalas song today as the song of the day. This is Dirty Money from Antibalas.
Dirty money, not the fruit.